Clubhouse.
Frisky
Fridays.
Frisky
Fridays in February.
Amp up your romance with Frisky Fridays in February.
Selections from the classics and tried and true favorites.
To brand new binges and sci-fi love stories.
We will have you snuggling on the couch every Friday in February.
This is Paul with Pod Clubhouse, and today I'm here with several awesome co-hosts to talk about Disney Plus's WandaVision, the first expansion of the Marvel Cinematic Universe into TV. I am joined today with Danny from ATX Gossip.
Hi.
And Scott and Cam from the Spy Hards podcast.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Glad to be here.
Hello, and thank you for having us.
Glad to have everybody with us. This is our first look, at least in terms of Pod Clubhouse, into any of the Marvel properties. First half, no spoilers. Second half, spoilers. So if you, for some reason, have listened to this podcast and do not want to be spoiled, then once we reach that second half, go ahead and stop the podcast and move on to your next Spy Hard or Pod Clubhouse podcast. WandaVision, are you guys familiar, anybody familiar with Matt Shakman or any of his previous work? Because he is apparently the brains behind this operation.
Certainly not me. Cam, do you have anything?
No, I'm not particularly familiar with him.
Me neither. Danny, did you have any familiarity?
I did not, but I did watch The Great, and I enjoyed that series more than I expected.
That's the smirking girl on the on the cover, but I haven't actually dug into it. What's it about?
Smirking Girl is Elle Fanning, FYI. It is about Catherine the Great. So Russian period piece, except it's done in like a very humorous fashion. It's not very historically accurate, which I'm okay with.
That seems to be a trend in TV now. Great exuberance for period pieces with no historical accuracy.
Exactly.
He is mostly well known, I guess, for the effects show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's where he has spent the most of his time. He has done plenty of drama directing, like with The Good Wife or Mad Men or Game of Thrones or whatever. Comedy seems to be where he has spent most of his time.
In that case, I'm very familiar with his work. I just didn't know it. Yeah, Always Sunny in Philadelphia is a great show. I've seen every episode many times.
He's credited with 43 episodes as director, so
I should pay more attention to the credits, apparently.
Well, that makes him an interesting choice, because there's some action in this show, but not much. They did need to rely on the sitcom format for several episodes before they got going into other kinds of storytelling. I read an article. There was a guest star, the mom from That 70s Show. She was in the first episode.
Yep.
She only took the job because it resembled sitcom format, which is something she knew. She didn't quite get the superhero stuff.
Well, it's funny because a friend of mine said after the first or second episode, we were talking about how much we loved it. Spoiler alert, I love it. This show is appealing to people who like MCU, people who like comics, and people who like vintage television. So even if you don't maybe like all three of those, if you like one of those, I feel like it's an appealing show.
The thing about Matt Shakman is, though, he's like a director. He doesn't write anything. So the thing is, I think he's very much guiding the visuals of this show. And I think that's something the show has done very well, is captured the aesthetics of, you know, everything from, you know, the earlier sitcoms to the stuff we'll talk about today.
Yeah, that's a good point. The head writer, Jack Schaefer, but it looks like Jack is probably short for Jacqueline. Wow, this is her first show.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
of this size, in any way. She has a story credit for Black Widow, and then she has some animated shorts, it looks like, but this is first show.
Yeah, she did the Anne Hathaway Rebel Wilson film, The Hustle, as well, which is okay. A remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I did see Olaf's Frozen Adventure, I think, at some point in my life.
Is that the one that no one liked?
I think it wasn't it like the one that was like 40 minutes and played before a Pixar movie and everyone was really angry?
No, it's the, I think it's the Christmas cartoon.
Is it? Okay.
I did like it.
There was one they played before a movie that was 20 minutes and people were furious.
That one does have a 5.6 on IMDb.
I think that may be it.
It's a 10-point scale, so.
Okay, right. I'm just going to go hide in the corner. I'll be back in a minute.
No, that's okay for not keeping, there's no points off for not keeping track of your Olaf cartoons on this episode.
I've never even seen Frozen, so.
Oh.
Ugh.
So childless. Is that
you are correct. I've got dogs, but no children.
All right. So the basic plot of this show is super hard to talk about in general terms, but I think we can say that this is a story which features Wanda Maximoff from the Avengers movies living out something with Vision, who we had seen die in Infinity War. Which, by the way, when you go back and watch the movies in which Vision features, didn't he seem to die pretty easy in Infinity War? You know, didn't he get kicked around by the minions of Thanos rather easy compared to like how much of a challenge he was for Ultron to take on? Or was that too nerdy to get into?
No, you're right. I mean, they definitely found a very questionable way to weaken that character where he got impaled, so therefore he was vulnerable throughout the rest of the story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He can phase through shit. I mean, come on now. Get stabbings shouldn't be a big issue for the guy. But anyhow, as we mentioned earlier, this show features this sitcom kind of format. When you go and watch the first couple of episodes, or first several episodes, in fact, they follow a sitcom format that was super common in a given decade. So the first one looks like a 50s sitcom, and then the next one looks like kind of 50s, kind of 60s. Every time they jump a decade, they add a new theme song and new, you know, furniture and that kind of stuff. It's cool. I mean, going back and to that reference with Frozen, I had read somewhere that the people that wrote the catchy Frozen music also redid all of the TV theme songs that they replayed throughout.
Oh, that's interesting. I remember when they hired some of the classic Disney songwriters to do the, I think, Stark Expo music. What it was the Howard Stark kind of like Disneyland-like clip or Walt Disney-like clip in Iron Man 2.
Oh.
I remember that they went and dug up the old Disney songwriters. So that's interesting. They're kind of carrying that over here.
Yeah, and were you guys aware that Dick Van Dyke was one of the people they consulted for the first one?
And that is a really cool piece of trivia. Tell the listeners what you know about that.
Well, I knew that he did not know anything about MCU, which I thought was funny.
He is 90 something, right?
I know, but how do you not know, like, at least that the MCU exists? And I thought it's funny because the minute the episode started, I knew it was Dick Van Dyke show that they were referencing with the way they set up the sitcom. And then with the others too, it was pretty obvious to me immediately, again, as a fan of old sitcoms, immediately what TV show that they were referencing, except the 80s one. I got a little confused at first, but as soon as the theme song came on, it
that
was quite obvious.
Kind of like Family Ties.
No, it was Growing Pains.
Growing Pains. Okay.
The opening with the sketching was actually exactly like Growing Pains, and they shoot on the Warner Brothers lot. And there were scenes like from the same thing of when they did the opening of Growing Pains. So, yeah, so it's like Dick Van Dyke, Brady Bunch, Growing Pains. Obviously, they've done like The Office style, also kind of mixed with Modern Family.
There's Bewitched somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Brady Bunch. Mm-hmm.
And all these are loving homages that you can feel both in like the music, the film stock even seems to be a reproduction, you know, in terms of like the colors used, loud, garish Brady Bunch colors seem to match.
I was a little disappointed they didn't use Full House. I'm not going to lie.
Maybe they'll do Fuller House.
I guess that's a possibility, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
It's all we have to hope for. The finale. They're saving it for episode 9.
Oh, goodness.
All right. So if you guys had to, as generally as possible, give a new viewer an idea of what this show is about, what would you tell them, Scott?
It's a show about a woman's descent into madness as she's lost someone that she loves and she's trying to piece her life back together. That's just stripping away everything else.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, that's right. Which sounds sounds odd, considering we just talked about Dick Van Dyke his madness is not meant to imply any kind of mental anguish, right? But the kind of show that he's known for making doesn't tonally match up with that.
This whole show is designed in a way to rub against the things that is also homaging at the same time. There's definitely a battle inside of it.
Going in the first couple episodes, people that asked me if they should watch it, they said, what's it about? And my niece, actually, who is 14, had called me and she was very confused. And she's like, I don't understand what's going on. And I said, you don't have to understand what's going on. And that's kind of how I felt about it in the beginning. I did not know what was happening going into the show. When I first heard it announced, I thought, I don't know what this is. I don't know if I'm going to like it. And no, I did not know what was going on, but I was totally cool with it. I enjoyed it anyway. So that's kind of what I told people. It was like, just kind of just take the ride. And we all know that things are going to be revealed. So don't worry about it. Just watch it, enjoy it for what it is. And that's the attitude I had. And obviously it paid off.
I think it's fair to bring up the most unfair criticism of the show, the fact that it is dropping weekly, and so it is revealing where the show is going at a pace that I think everybody on this call is of age to recall without any trouble. You know, the idea of a weekly deployment of episodes.
Speak for yourself. I'm 12.
Oh, okay. You have a much deeper voice than I would have been accustomed to. But yeah, the idea of this weekly show is throwing people. And so they're not liking that, or at least they're not appreciating that for the built-in analysis and discussion time that the format allows.
With the current pandemic, we've lost the water cooler.
That's
we
true.
Don't go into an office to talk anymore. So people want this binge version because you're just watching it at home, you know, talking to your dog.
I've also found that, though, this is a show that very much embraces the mystery box storytelling method, which is pretty much just all plot driven for the most part. I kind of get why people would prefer it all at once, because they just want to binge through the plot and then talk about what the picture is, the big picture is, because every episode kind of leaves you going, well, the show creators know what's coming next, but I have no idea, other than, you know, if you're a Marvel fan and you can figure out the clues. So I can kind of get it. I don't know that the show's generating the buzz that they want either. So maybe that's something they should be looking at going forward. Because it just seems like when you compare it to, say, like a show like The Mandalorian, which I think gives more standalone stories, people really seem to talk about it more than they are WandaVision.
That's a good call. And it will be interesting in, say, 6 months to guess or second guess whether or not they should have led with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which looks to be all action all the time.
I'm wondering if Falcon and the Winter Soldier was supposed to be first and there was a pandemic issue, and that I think this one was easier to shoot and complete perhaps because of the way it's set up versus a Falcon show, which seems a little more, you know, out in the public versus a controlled set like this one is. I'm not 100% sure, but I had memories that Falcon Winter Soldier was supposed to be first.
I can't disagree with that.
It does seem weird to open your Marvel TV series run with kind of the weird show.
Yeah, well, that's a good descriptor. If you recall, revealed the twins. Maria Hill said, he's fast, she's weird.
that's right.
Descriptor of their powers. And I think that's very intentional that they did that. I mean, obviously, anything that Joss Whedon puts down is going to be intentional. But the descriptor of weird leaves her powers to be wide open to interpretation. They can say later where they come from.
Yeah, the powers thing, it's fairly well-defined in comic books, but I had to laugh. There was a story on Entertainment Weekly just the other day, and the story on the main page was, what exactly are Wanda's powers?
Yeah, we can let's put a pin in that for the second half of discussion, because I have some questions about what happens with her powers in this show compared to what I thought I knew about them. as well. Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of characters, like I mentioned, we do have Wanda, we do have Vision, and then we have a few other people in town, but only one of those that seems to come back with any regularity, and that's Agnes, who you'll recognize her as Catherine Hahn.
Oh yeah, she's in Step Brothers. She was the voice of Dr. Octopus in Into the Spider-Verse. She's a really reliable comic actor and just a fantastic talent.
I think I knew her first from Horrible Moms.
Bad Moms. Yeah.
Bad Moms. Mm-hmm. It's Horrible Bosses. Different movie. Right. Same kind of premise. But but yeah, Bad Moms. And then we have some people in another, I guess, super monitoring organization that, well, they're more like they're attached to it, that are familiar faces from previous MCU properties. We have Jimmy Woo, played by Randall Park. He was in the Ant-Man and the Wasp movie. Enjoyable short bit that he had in that one. He's, if you don't recall, he was the FBI agent assigned to keep track of Scott Lang on house arrest. And then we have Darcy Lewis, who was from the first two Thor movies, who was just sort of the comic relief. What was she, like a TA or something?
Maybe. Yeah, an intern, I think, wasn't
intern.
She?
She was pals with Natalie Portman's character, Jane. Oh, yeah, there is one very notable addition to the crew here that was teased well before the show came out, so I think it's fair to talk about her here, which is the Monica Rambeau character as a grown-up who was a kid in the Captain Marvel movie. Anybody else you guys want to bring up?
I don't think so. No, I think that's kind of the core group for sure. Yeah.
Boy, it is so hard not to spoil anything mm-hmm. in this discussion. All right. So as we mentioned, the setting and the visual aesthetic shifts every episode. It's not jarring, I don't think, because they're only 25-minute episodes, 30-minute episodes. So it's not like you invest in one look and then be like, oh, they changed it, because it moves every time. I am just drawing a blank on how to generally describe this show.
It's tough. It's tough.
And that's really not meant to describe a shortcoming with the show. It's more like they give you 20 minutes of stuff to watch, and then they give you about 5 minutes to be like, oh, wow, this is really advancing the plot now. But they do that on a weekly basis. You get the cool stuff to watch, and you get the little bit of meta or larger plot to follow that unfolds just a little bit at a time. As we are recording this right now, we are still two episodes away from the end, so we don't know how it ends up.
Well, other than a Fuller House tribute, yeah.
Of course. I mean, that goes without saying.
Yes, a Fuller House tribute where I am really hoping my not-so-secret boyfriend Benedict Cumberbatch shows up.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Have you guys heard of any teased appearances by other MCU faces?
Well, I think Benedict is the main one because, you know, Wanda is going to feature into Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness coming out, I don't know, at some point in the future. And so it makes a lot of sense that would somehow line up with probably the ending of this show, I think, probably.
It hasn't ever been discussed. We go back to that powers discussion. In the comics, they are both wielders of magic, but not the same magic, as far as I understand. But in the movies, he's very clearly, you know, the Sorcerer Supreme or whatever. But her power is still just, quote unquote, weird. Have they ever mentioned magic in regard to her powers, to your knowledge?
They always said she had the mutant power to alter reality. And so that's kind of magic-y anyway, but they always kind of tied it more to her mutant powers because in the comics, her and Quicksilver were both the children of Magneto. They've kind of fudged around that in the yes. in the films, but that was the case in the original comics. So they showed up as his children and would often battle, you know, the X-Men or the Avengers. And so they really leaned heavily on the mutants. Marvel could do that now, but I think because they've already carried Scarlet Witch so far already in the film world, they don't quite want to tack on mutant stuff yet, or even maybe at all.
Oh, see, I think they are going to, but that'll be something in the spoiler section that I don't pick up on a lot of these things myself because I'm not a comic book reader, but I watch a lot of TikTok and everybody has a theory.
All right, well then let's put this first half to rest because it is getting too painful to just tiptoe and tap dance and other T words around what we want to actually talk about in this episode. So I'll start with Scott. What is, would you recommend this show or say love it or leave it? What would you say, Scott?
Personally, I would go with love it. I'm really enjoying this sort of offbeat take on not only just sitcoms themselves, because I love sitcoms, although I will just say a lot of these sitcoms in the show are very American and I don't know them, so the references are kind of missed on a lot of British people, I would say. But you can sort of, you know what they're going for, at least. And then you also get to see your characters in very odd circumstances. I mean, seeing Vision doing talking heads is not a moment I thought I'd ever see in my lifetime.
All right, Cam?
I've been very mixed on this one, and that, you know, when you look at the Marvel films, Iron Man aside, which was obviously a triumph right out of the gate, they kind of struggled figuring out how to make movies for a little bit. You know, you had The Incredible Hulk, you had Iron Man 2. Those are generally regarded as the weaker Marvel films. A lot of people are very mixed on Thor. I found this show to be a little bumpy in the regards of, I love the aesthetics of it. I think the performers are great. But it feels like a lot of the storytelling is walking this weird line of expecting us to have a lot more investment in things that haven't been set up very well and characters who probably should have been established a little better earlier on. And so I'm just kind of wondering how they're going to tie this thread of determining whether these shows, you know, how much they matter, because they have a lot of Marvel shows coming and it's going to be very difficult to get people to watch every single show and see all the movies. So how much do the shows matter at the end of the day? How much do they really want to tie them to the films? I feel like they're kind of at that uncomfortable spot. So I'm watching with interest, and I would say people should probably watch it if they're a fan of the Marvel Universe to see how this goes. But as an overall package, I struggle with some episodes, this one more so than maybe the last couple.
That's a great point. I was someone that bought all in to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at the beginning because there was that promise. You know, Joss and his brother Jed Whedon ran that show at the beginning. I guess Jed did for the whole run. But after a certain point, unbeknownst to TV viewers behind the camera, there was a rift between the TV people and the movie people, and they kind of divorced from each other after The Winter Soldier came out. They never had anything to do with each other again. And that was highly disappointing. Someone watching, you know, 22 episode seasons of this show, you thought were supposed to tie in, but actually turned out to mean nothing toward the movie plots.
I just find that whole concept sort of odd. I know what they did with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you've got things like Marvel's Runaways and stuff like that out there as well that are technically in the MCU, I guess.
Yeah.
But I feel like if it's on Disney Plus, it should be canon, because you're asking people, I mean, people who watch Endgame should have seen the films before that. And they don't explain things to you. They just make you watch the film. So I think going forward, if it's on Disney Plus, it should be perfectly referenced and they should expect you to watch it.
I don't know. Like, I agree it's 100% canon, but it's asking people a lot when you're cranking out like four shows at a time. Greenlit something like 13 shows or something. At a certain point, you're asking people to watch three or four movies a year plus three or four television series a year. That's a lot to ask of people, especially, you know, like, look, most of us here, maybe not all, I don't know, are all Marvel Cinematic Universe fans and are on board for this stuff. But I don't know. I look at my parents. They've enjoyed the movies. There's no way they're going to watch all these shows.
That's a danger. If you put an important plot point, like all of a sudden, say Vision is alive after this show. I don't know if he is or he's not, but say he is. If you just watch the movies, last time you saw that guy, he was dead. You know, are they just supposed to have a long exposition? Don't you remember when he was brought back to life in the weird little town or whatever? No, that's a bad thing to do in the movies. That's a great point.
It's not very different, though, than Star Wars. I mean, I also watched the Star Wars franchises, but I didn't watch Clone Wars. And then there were things in The Mandalorian that tied into Clone Wars that I just went online and read about or somebody told me about. It didn't make me dislike The Mandalorian, though, by not knowing those little tidbits. So I feel like it's kind of the same thing. It just is. It is what it is when you have a fandom like this. They're going to keep adding on. It's about the money.
I guess my question is more, how substantial can they work with these stories in terms of bringing in characters? You know, these shows are centered on you know, main icons of the Marvel Universe. How much can you really change them in those, say, 8 episodes or 4 episodes, whatever it is, if you're going to pick them up in the next movie? You know, you can definitely do little things, but I wonder how much you can really change the status quo.
Let's dive into that a little bit more in the second half after we get Danny and my assessment of the show. Danny, what would you say? Would you, do you love it, leave it, recommend it, don't?
I still love it, even listening to your very educated feedback, fellas.
No. It's not that educated.
I think that it's like just nerdy enough, like I said, for the people who are into the comics and are really deep into the MCU. I think it's not too nerdy for people who maybe aren't into all of those aspects, like myself. I mean, I'm obviously nerdy, or I wouldn't be here talking with y'all. And I'm okay with the uncomfortableness of it, of not knowing where it's going, which I touched on earlier. I'm just kind of along for the ride, and I think it's well written, it's well acted. I like all of the actors, all the even the new cast members, as we've discussed. So yes, it might be a lot to ask of people, but I'm okay with that. And I have recommended it to quite a few people. I've even had some friends who have kids, and they've asked, like, oh, should I be watching this? And I tell them, I think they should. Yes, I think it's a good, I think it's a show they would all enjoy to watch as a family. That's part of that Disney Plus thing. I think Disney kept that in mind when they were making this. So I will say that going in, when you talk about all of the shows and movies they're working on, I was actually not excited for Falcon and Winter Soldier or Loki. But now that I've seen how well this show is done, I am more excited to watch those other shows. But I also watch a shit ton of television.
I love it, but after hearing Cam's kind of so-so appraisal of the show, I have to wonder if I would love it if I were in the middle of the usual 3-movie-a-year glut of superhero movies, which we are not right now. It has been a long time since I have seen new superhero stuff. And so this is the only show in town. And so it has become basically appointment TV. Even though it's streaming, you get the idea. We still watch it on the day it comes out, kind of like, you know, Mandalorian. But would it be so if I had just recently gotten an injection of, you know, Avengers or Ant-Man or Thor or whatever? I don't know. I haven't looked in the mirror on that one. I do enjoy, like Danny mentioned, I am down with the storytelling, the little bits of reveals, the shifts in acting, like the acting that we're seeing on screen, trying to match the various archetypes that were familiar in those eras of sitcoms. I think they're doing really well and bringing in actors to match, like, the different eras as guest stars and stuff. That's all coming off really well. Like, I like Kat Dennings, for instance, although I don't know that this is the best acting she's ever done in her life on this show, but I like her in general. But yeah, I think I would still recommend it. People looking for something new and interesting, but everything Cam said, I can't disagree with. The idea that, are these shows meant to move the needle on these characters, or are they just a way to keep Disney Plus subscriptions operating between movies? I don't know yet. The ending of this show might help determine that.
That's maybe a question in itself. Is this show worth getting Disney Plus for? Because everyone has it. I have it for this, and I will probably drop it for a bit until Falcon and Winter Soldier finished, and then maybe just binge that whole thing.
My answer to that would be not as much as The Mandalorian, but, well, the thing is, like, the first handful of Marvel shows are must-sees. You know, this, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki, those are all going to be must-sees. Once you get to, like, show number 6, 7, 8, and onwards, that's when people are thinking going to, you know, make the call much harsher. But the first few, everyone's going to feel like they have to watch them.
Well, these are the ones that have the commits from the movie actors.
Yeah.
Like when they're talking about the Wakanda one or something like that, I don't know who's committed to that. And I guess I'm one of those people, almost, I guess, any TV viewer that want, if you're going to use the same brand, I want to see the same face. And if I don't see it, then it's kind of like, that can wait. You know, I think you're onto something there, Cam. So let's flip to the second half of the discussion. So if what you came here for was to get our stamp of approval for the show, you have, I would say there was the stamp sound there. You might have some dissatisfaction with those elements that we talked about, but generally you're going to see a well-made show with the actors from the movies, and it is pretty cool to watch some of the stuff that happens. It is pretty neat to watch. But let's talk about more specifics now. Okay, so if you're, that's what you were here for, go ahead and stop the podcast, because we're going to spoil the shit out of it now. Let's start at the end. At least our end. Who has gone ahead and looked up Agatha Harkness?
I was vaguely familiar with this character. I'm more of, like, I grew up reading Marvel Comics. I was much more of a Spider-Man / Silver Surfer fan.
Okay.
But I did touch on the Avengers stuff, and I had vague memories. And yeah, Agatha Harkness, bit obscure for sure, but she is somewhat of a consistent presence throughout the history of the Marvel Universe. Very much being portrayed as a villain here, which is interesting, because I don't know that you would say she's a villain in the comics. And right. So it's going to be interesting to see how this character develops in the next couple episodes.
From what I've read, she has spent most of her time as a caretaker to the Fantastic Four's lead duo, Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm. They have a kid at some point named Franklin, and she comes on the scene as his caretaker. So when I mentioned in the first half that she might be a way to tie into other franchises, i.e. the ones that they bought with the Fox purchase, that might be how. But they would have to kind of do a lot of legwork to get from where they are now. Posing her as a villain to the caretaker of a child of people whose characters we haven't met yet.
I feel like you don't cast Catherine Hahn unless you want to do something with her.
Yeah.
And now that you're finally revealing this character to be a very eccentric, strange comic book character, if you've got her, why wouldn't you exploit this in future properties? I wouldn't be shocked if she does show up in a number of the shows, especially the ones dealing maybe with, magic or kind of otherworldly type stuff.
She is, in the comics, something around 10,000 years old, and so she is portrayed as a much older woman in the comics. And she is a magic user, and if I get my power scales right, she is on the level of Wanda, maybe even more powerful just because she's been around so long.
Well, there was something I read or heard that in some of the comics she helped train Wanda, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And harness her power.
There's that element, and she has a role, although it's kind of confusing. Let's just leave it as she has a role in the creation of Wanda's kids in the comics.
Correct. And she has a role in what happened to Wanda's kids in this last episode.
Right. Something in the basement. I have no idea what happened to those kids. Do you think they're just like blinked out?
No. So someone on TikTok, because I love the TikTok, found, like, I don't know where they got the descriptions from. I don't know, like, who their cable provider was or if it was, like, where it came from. But they screen grabbed something that says, Agatha Harkness, Catherine Hahn, so it was about the show, takes the twins into the basement and eats them.
Wow. What? That's very Grimm's fairy tales there.
And apparently that happens in the comics some point. But I want to know how. Does she just open her mouth and like more they go in? How does that work?
Well, she did say she once bit a kid.
Yeah, yes, she did actually.
Yep.
There is no way on a Disney Plus show or a Disney property period, this woman is going to be eating children.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting theory. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, I'm for it. That would be amazing.
Who do you guys think Ralph is? Because, we've never seen her husband. So do you have a theory on who Ralph is or if Ralph is someone?
I think Ralph is like a Vera, if you get my Cheers reference.
Yeah. I don't know that Ralph... Is Ralph really a thing? Or was that just concocted?
I don't know, because a lot of the theories online are that Ralph is... And I don't know if I'm saying it right, because I'm not a comic book writer. Mephisto, the devil guy? Like, he's the devil?
Well, he...
Mephisto,
thank you. And there's, like... references in her apartment. There was like the wallpaper is his head, and there were some other things that people pointed out.
Well, he also has a role in the creation of the kids, because the kids exist at different points in the comic story. At one point he reabsorbs them, but I don't know if that story has anything to do with Agatha.
I don't know. I'm just giving you guys the theories that these very intelligent people on TikTok have come up
with. Well, like, Mephisto makes a lot of sense to bring in at some point. He is a very prominent, you know, supernatural villain in the Marvel Universe, so it would make complete sense to introduce him to have for a Doctor Strange movie, perhaps. You know, maybe there's one coming soon featuring Wanda. You never know. Or, you know, anything else. You know, you could even work him into a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And I mean, he has featured in a couple Marvel-related films. Mephisto did show up in the two Ghost Rider films.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Peter Fonda, and I think, what's his name? I'm completely blanking. He voiced Steppenwolf in Justice League. Kieran Hines.
He seems like kind of a heavy hitter to spend on a TV show.
Well, if you can tease him, though.
Yeah, and we don't know how much they're setting up for Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Like you
said.
That's
true.
Much like having Ronan in Guardians of the Galaxy, who was just working for Thanos.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Ronan is Agatha in this scenario.
Good parallel. I guess there was also, like, the cat that she's holding is also part of her deal. She has a...
bunny. She's holding a bunny.
A bunny? Oh, then I guess it's a cat in the comics. But she's a magician, so it might be a cat that looks like a bunny.
Well, So can I tell you guys about the X-Men crossover I read about?
Oh, yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are two different things that I saw. One is that, and who know more about this universe than I might be able to answer this. So there was a scene, I think it was in the third episode, maybe the fourth, where Jimmy Woo is giving the background on Wanda, and director Hayward says, does she have any kind of funny nickname? Is there something that does he have an alias she goes by? And he says, no. People are saying, like, why would they write that in unless they're making a reference to the fact that she is called Scarlet Witch in the X-Men movies? But she's not called Scarlet Witch in the MCU world. So what if Hayward is from another, like, universe or multiverse? Like, he's from a different place where the X-Men exist.
Was Scarlet Witch in the X-Men films?
Pietro was.
Yeah.
But they didn't touch on his sister. Remember, he just lived with his mom in, like, Jersey or something, right? In the last two X-Men movies, Apocalypse and the one that ruined everything, Dark Phoenix.
Was there, like, a young sister, though? Like, someone who was, like, maybe, like, 6 or 7 years old in those movies that, like, I would never remember, but maybe was in the scene?
She would have gone by in a flash. And plus, oh, yeah. They're twins, right? So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, let's be honest. The X-Men movies didn't really follow the canon that closely a lot of the time.
No. They borrowed some names, mostly.
Yeah. There was a lot of invention going on, which is fine. I'm a big fan of invention done well. I love Batman Returns, and that movie's not exactly comics accurate. So, you know, when the X-Men pulled it off, you know, it worked.
When they did. That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
We were starting to lean into the idea in the first half of can this show help open pathways to those properties that were reacquired during the Fox purchase? By that, I mean all of the X characters and the Fantastic Four. I think it can, but that would be earlier than Kevin Feige, the big brain behind Marvel's cinematic universe, indicated he was going to do it.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if we see single characters kind of work their way in. I know there's been kind of rumblings that perhaps we could see Rogue as the villain of Captain Marvel 2, for example. You know, she got her powers from Captain Marvel in the comics.
And kept them for years and years.
Exactly. But that's something they could maybe look at doing, is working in some of the characters you want to establish early on, and so that we actually care even more so when they do make some sort of proper X-Men team in the Marvel universe. I think that could work really well. That's something that they probably should have, you know, in a different world done with, well, Wanda herself, as established her a little before she showed up in the Avengers movies, because I think she often got sidelined in those films unfairly. And it's very much, I think, an effort to correct that wrong, because now that you've got people like Downey Jr. out of the picture, you need your Wandas to prop up these Avengers movies and the Marvel universe going forward.
Yeah, that's something that the movie watchers might have skipped. There was a key conversation between Monica and Jimmy, a recent episode, where they are kind of recounting who did well against Thanos. It's passed over relatively quickly in the movies, but Wanda did as well as anyone. And he basically had to cheat in order to overcome her. And that is an indication that she, when she's on her game and she's super pissed off, might be the most powerful superhero we've met. And I'm including Captain Marvel. She's flashy with her being able to fly through ships and all that, but knowing where Scarlet Witch came from in the comics, I would trade all of Captain Marvel's powers for what Scarlet Witch can do.
So, okay, I have another question about X-Men.
Yeah.
So why do you guys think Quicksilver was played by Evan Peters? Do you think that was just like a tongue-in-cheek thing? Or do you think they were trying to do something more with that by using him instead of Aaron Johnson or whatever that other guy's name is?
I think it's got to be... this is how they opened the door. To tying back to what we were saying before, having Evan Peters come in, having him turn up, but him not be the right guy, and everyone kind of sensing it's a bit off. You know, we see those different doorways in Agatha's, you know, cellar in the most recent episode. It could just be different multiverses. That's what the next film is about. You know, Multiverse of Madness, I think it's called. I think this is just the way they opened the door.
I really was leaning that way when that character showed up. And now I'm not so sure, because the show has kind of left it in a weird place where he barely... did he even show up in this episode? I think very briefly.
Wait, did you guys... you know there was an end credit scene, right?
Snoop's gonna snoop.
Yep, go for it.
Snoop. Okay, just make sure, because I missed it the first time. And the second time I let it run through and I was like, oh shit.
I found out on Reddit. I was just reading and I was like, oh, there is actually a scene this time after five episodes of just watching 10 minutes of credits.
Exactly.
All right. Snooper's going to snoop. That's an interesting point. It may just be gaslighting us a little bit there, because you get the indication with that, with the Agatha reveal, that may be magic that she's doing. And for Marvel movie watchers, perhaps that's just sort of like a little reward for us to see, you know, that crossover character. But it may just be a glamour put on us, the viewers, in seeing something that isn't there.
On the flip side, though, I could 100% see them deciding to go with this, because Evan Peters was one of the most popular additions to those more recent X-Men films. So,
yeah.
I mean, you've got a fan favorite.
He's a good actor, recognizable face. Unless they do a little like Rise of Skywalker style retconning, then...
Oh no, don't ever say that.
Then they've broken the Magneto connection.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get that back.
That was so dumb. I mean, yeah. Kevin hasn't made a lot of missteps, but that might have been one.
Well, you can always bring in Polaris.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and that's a very X character.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to muddle your existing characters with retconning that way, but still.
I don't think Marvel was thinking that ahead, because I don't know that they had any way of ever forecasting that they would one day, you know, that Disney would own Fox. Because I couldn't help but feel like when they killed Quicksilver in Age of Ultron, that was kind of a bit of a screw you to Fox. And now they're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, right. Danny, what we're talking about is that Magneto in the comics is Wanda and Pietro's father.
Right, I have read that, yes.
Straight up. And in the early comics, they were all bad mutants. They were the primary enemies of the X-Men, you know, issue in, issue out. It was the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and they were starring Magneto and his kids, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. It's funny, if you read the comics now, they're all friends. The X-Men and Magneto, they're all like hanging out in the same area, doing the same stuff.
Well, someone also made a connection that when Wanda sings, was, I can't remember what episode, she sings like a lullaby to the boys.
It's in Sokovian, yeah.
It's in Sokovian, but it sounds a lot like the lullaby that Magneto sings in Polish, his daughter.
In Apocalypse?
Or was it Dark Phoenix or was it Apocalypse? I think it was Dark Phoenix, wasn't it?
Oh, it maybe was, because I didn't see Dark Phoenix, so maybe it was that.
Apocalypse is the one where the townspeople accidentally get his family killed.
Right. I don't remember him singing in that one, so maybe it is from Dark Phoenix.
That's right. The family got killed in that one. It was, he worked on a co-op in the Dark Phoenix, right?
Something like that.
It was like he had a refuge for mutants to hang out in that looked like a low budget filmmaker's option, you know, like someone's backyard.
I apologize for confusing those two thuddingly mediocre movies together.
I'm sorry for bringing them up. So, okay, I have another question for y'all. I got lots of questions.
Oh, please.
You're my expert panel. Okay, so obviously Monica, her whole cell changed from going in and out of the Hex. Now Kat Dennings has gone through and will maybe perhaps have to come out. So is Kat Dennings going to have some powers? Because she has signed on to do multiple more projects for Disney. So there is a theory, and again, not a comic book reader, but and I maybe even not a popular character, that Loki has a best friend that's a female, like Verity Lewis. And there's a theory that Darcy could become that character and be in the Loki series. Thoughts?
I mean, Kat Dennings, I think, is a really great comic actress. So throwing her in a Loki series would be fun. I would love to see her in more of these Marvel Universe films. I think anytime you can have a really fun supporting player, you can just work into the movies. That's always a good thing. That would work for me.
She comes from the Thor movies. So to have her match up with Loki again would make a lot of sense. As far as the character, though, I had thought Darcy was just an invention of the movies. So I didn't. Then again, I didn't look into her that closely. I am one of those people that has the gigantic Marvel encyclopedia, but that mostly covers superpowered people, not their friends.
She was an invention, although I do wonder if they've worked her perhaps into more recent comics in some way and given her more to do. That could be another option. I'm not exactly sure. I'm a little out of date with my knowledge.
Well, the movies have wagged the dog a little bit. In terms of, like, say, Jane Foster, it was kind of, what was it, her, like, what came first, the movie or the fact that she became Thor in the comics?
I believe the first movie preceded that, yeah.
And then, you know, Natalie signs on to do another Thor movie, so I think it's going to be pretty obvious if you've read any of the Thor comics in the last 5 years, what that's going to be about.
Well, we should touch on Monica Rambeau, who
for sure
has had many names in the Marvel Universe: Captain Marvel, Photon, Pulsar, Spectrum. So she definitely has a pretty, you know, strong backstory in the comics. I know that they were pretty eager to work this character in. This is the one I'm struggling with the most because they're expecting us to have a lot of, I think, interest in a character that hasn't quite earned it yet. I feel like this character needs a movie or something to establish her a little better.
Well, that's fair. I mean, we met her as a kid.
Yeah.
We've seen a little bit, if she does wind up with superpowers, which we saw a little bit of in this last episode, we've seen her kind of origin, but in terms of all of our other cinematic heroes, we've seen the shit that Stephen Strange had to go through to get his powers. He didn't just have to, like, walk through some like red wave. You know, he had to survive quite a bit of stuff in order to earn his powers.
I mean, I'm just hoping that maybe we can get this character in a more prominent role in a Captain Marvel 2, for example, and boost their profile a little bit. Because you're right, walking through a field is not the most cinematic of origin stories. Especially after we've watched that kind of goofy sequence of her trying to drive a truck through it.
Did that make any sense to you? I mean,
no.
Okay, I'm glad. She drives the truck. It starts to eat the truck. She's like, oh, shit, I got to get out of the truck. And then she's like, oh, but never mind. I'll just walk through without the truck.
Yeah. And then she saw the Matrix.
Okay. It's just one of those got to buy it kind of moments, I guess.
I mean, I'm hoping the next two episodes at least give us a little more detail there. I think they have to.
And how is it that a captain or asked a major to show up where another military operation was happening without any kind of like crossed wires occurring? How could that be? I mean, I've never been in the military, but I do know that captains don't tell majors what to do.
Well, I think it's a loose approach to military rule here.
Maybe she's a naval captain. That, but then naval captains don't tell Air Force majors what to do either.
Well, the only cool fan theory I heard about that was that entire team was comprised of Skrulls.
Oh, boy.
I mean, they have greenlit their secret invasion series, so it's not impossible.
Boy, we could really nerd out now because when you start talking about like the multiverse aspects of where the MCU can go, plus you add in the shape-shifting stuff that has to do with the secret invasion storylines, I think you're going to get into areas where Ma and Pa movie watcher are going to start to lose track of shit real fast. You know, when you have people, I mean, the whole idea with that story is that a bunch of people apparently die right up front. But it's not really them. It's somebody else. I fear, as someone who absolutely devours superhero movies, that if they make them too complicated, people will stop coming.
Well, that's what happens with comic books, right? Where they would always do these huge, massive crossover storylines, and they would frustrate people at a certain point. So hopefully they can. I think the thing is, Marvel has had, you know, what, like 40 years of comic books. And they kind of know where they can go wrong. So I'm hoping they apply that to the movie world and avoid these pitfalls that could really plague, you know, storytellers that don't do it well. And, you know, we'll see how, say, for example, you know, I know the Flash movie for DC is planning to do multiverse type stuff as well. Mm. One of these studios is going to do it poorly. And my money is not on Marvel to do it poorly.
Oh, boy. Maybe we can convince the Pod Clubhouse brass to let us do Justice League when that comes out next month.
Oh, wow.
If you want to dive into that universe.
The Snyderverse. Are we ever truly ready to dive into the Snyderverse?
Oh, man, well. I'm ready. I'm totally ready.
We do live in a society, after all.
That's right.
Danny, did you have any other comic-y questions that you had generated?
Sorry, I zoned out. You guys were getting a little too nerdy for me.
Yeah, you could smell the BO from there, right?
No, I mean, the only other thing, and again, this think is a comic-y thing. I just saw a lot of chatter about the book that's in Agatha's basement is perhaps the book that Doctor Strange is looking for, and that the fact that there was a commercial for Nexus was the brand that was the commercial this week, mm-hmm. and somehow Nexus mm-hmm. has something to do with how Wanda opens the multiverse. So these were just things that people were kind of trying to tie into Doctor Strange in the next movie, which I don't care. All I want is Benedict Cumberbatch to show up. So let's you know, I got two episodes for it.
My knowledge of magical Marvel books is admittedly limited. There's like, I know of the Darkhold. Isn't that the name of it? There's the one that they made a TV show about.
That's what they're trying to say this book is.
Oh, is that the one? Oh, well. Yeah. The one book I know. Perfect.
You're smarter than you thought you were.
Yeah, who knew? Scott definitely didn't think that was the case. but, you know, if you have the Darkhold, that's a book with a lot of supernatural properties. You know, we were talking about Mephisto earlier. You could easily work him into that as well if you wanted to. And, you know, again, like Sam Raimi is directing the next Doctor Strange film. Sam Raimi is someone who's incredibly good at horror storytelling. So I do wonder if they are going to be working horror elements into the next Doctor Strange, in which case something like the Darkhold would make sense.
When it comes to superheroes and magic, that has been an area where I have had zero interest as a reader. I always thought magic was just sort of a cheat or something. Just an uninteresting area for me.
Magic's tough because people, even though it's all fictional, they can kind of understand, you know, Iron Man's powers or, you know, name your random Marvel character. But when you start working in magic, you start to go, well, what can't they do and why? I think characters like maybe, you know, we may see Wanda get more and more powerful throughout this show leading into the next movie. Doctor Strange is incredibly powerful, but we don't have a strong sense as to what limits them.
Exactly. And part of what I need as a genre fan are rules to the universe that I am watching. I was one of those kids that when my dad was watching like classic Star Trek reruns, that show was not written with any continuity. And so I'd ask my dad, well, you know, in the last one, the guy on the helmsman engaged warp drive, but the guy on the left did it this time. So who's in charge of warp drive, you know, or questions like that. And he'd be, I don't know, but I found myself needing those sorts of boundaries and rules in the universes that I enjoy. And that is always what bothered me about magic was, you're right. It's whatever I want to do. Speaking of powers and magic, I had mentioned putting a pin in the powers that we have seen displayed in the show and how they kind of match up with what I thought I knew about the characters. I'm talking specifically about Wanda and her ability to do this at all.
Yeah.
Does that match up with what we know that she can do?
I don't know. Can you tell me what she could do in the previous films? Because I'm very unclear on that.
She could pick up heavy things. And she's throw them
the
around.
Wiggly woos. The red wiggly woos, yeah.
I love that. Wiggly woos. That's perfect. Yeah. It's kind of just like a red energy. She would kind of do little finger movements and shoot that. And you're like, I guess that's a thing.
But she mostly affected physical things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she did in Ultron affect, like, she would change people's, like, memory and stuff. So she gave everyone visions and things like that. So there was a visual deception at play as well.
Okay. In that movie, she touched them, right? And sort of incepted this madness that lasted for a period of minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's how they made their getaway from that tanker.
Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering if it'll be revealed that Wanda isn't actually completely responsible for this whole thing and that Agatha has a lot more to do with it than we've been led on so far.
Well, it was Agatha all along. Didn't you hear the song?
I heard it's a very catchy song.
It's been in my head for days.
I think Agatha's behind most of it. The thing is, they were definitely teasing out the House of M storyline from the comics where Wanda becomes unhinged and wipes out, like, all the mutants, basically, or the majority of the mutants.
Which was a story related to her kids.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think a lot of fans were just expecting somewhat of a straight adaptation of that. And I think Marvel has kind of curved on that one, and Agatha is going to be behind more of it. But that's why I really question this whole Agatha as a villain thing versus we're seeing someone who's going to be that mentor, which will explain why Wanda in the future is more powerful. Because, look, this is a character, again, Elizabeth Olsen is a great actress. You've got her under contract. You want to use her more. You have to give her more interesting things to do than shoot wiggly woos out of her hand.
That's a great point. Maybe what we've seen so far is are not the actions of a villain, but they are the actions of a mentor, an eccentric mentor, who is trying to keep our hero from pissing off the actual villain.
Yes, I thought about that too, because, you know, in most movies or TV shows that have witches, they're always fighting against this dark power that they could have, and they've got to try to stay on the good side, the light side. And I wondered if in Wanda's grief, more of this dark power is seeping in, and perhaps she's there to control that and teach her how to keep that darkness at bay. And that's why we're seeing more her able to do more things.
That's a really good theory, actually.
She's like Willow from Buffy.
With two episodes to go, that kind of twist, as opposed to just some sort of straight up magic battle royale consuming the next two episodes, that makes more sense, or at least would be a little more compelling.
Oh, I feel so much smarter than I did going into this, you guys.
And the thing is, like, Agatha's been hiding behind a mask for almost this entire show. You've hired Catherine Hahn. Do you really want to just, like, write her out in two episodes after a magic fight? Or do you want to do more with this actual character who finally gets to actually be herself?
Mm-hmm. I think you can try to get her in a movie at some point.
Or a spinoff show or something. Yeah.
Or something. In particular, when I'm thinking about these powers, I hadn't considered the Ultron connection as strongly, because they mention somehow when they're the sword people are running down her powers and they say that she's psychic. She is not. As far as I recall, she can affect reality in the comics, but that's different than being a psychic. And then Vision's ability to deprogram people using his fingers, that also seems not on the money for me.
Well, it is funny that Marvel took the two characters whose powers are the least well explained of their cinematic universe and put them together in a show. Because, like, both Vision and Wanda's powers were not well established in the movies.
If this hex magic version of Vision has some working facsimile of the Mind Stone reinstalled, perhaps that would explain his ability to do that.
Also, if Vision is a creation of the hex, or somehow in between, then maybe his powers are undefined because he's just a creation. And he can manipulate things in the hex because he's also part of the hex. But that wig, that brain stuff wouldn't work in the real world.
Yeah, he just has the phasing, which, you know, would just kill you. It would just scramble your brains.
Laser beam on his head, of course.
Right. I guess I'm overthinking it a little bit.
Well, I think the rules will be pretty firmly set when we get the Hawkeye show, at least.
Right. They hit what they shoot.
Exactly.
A little more cut and dry for me. Do you have any big predictions that we didn't already discuss for the final couple episodes, Scott?
The only thing I'd say is a prediction that I think we have one more large cameo to come, be it Benedict Cumberbatch or be it a mutant perhaps of some note from Fox's universe. I think there's another big name to come.
I think Doctor Strange, but if I have to throw in another potential cameo, maybe Wong could be a character that shows up as well.
Wong.
Oh my God, how disappointed will I be if it's Wong? I'm just saying.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Sorry, he went out for the tuna melt. He got lost. He ended up in the Hex. It happens.
Okay, what about Baron Mordo then?
Okay, what about you, Danny? Any predictions?
I'm just keeping my fingers crossed for Benny.
I'm not as positive about another MCU hero showing up. I do think that there is a bigger bad that is going to be revealed here. And that will send Wanda's character in whatever direction impels her toward the next movie appearance. And if that's as a villain or as a hero, we'll see. I don't think, as much as I like Paul Bettany, I don't think he's making it out of this show. That's just my guess.
I mean, I love Paul Bettany. I think he's a great casting decision for Vision. And, you know, when he showed up in Age of Ultron, I was so excited. But Paul Bettany's not a young guy either. And I don't know how much longer he wants to wear the sort of makeup and, you know, the bodysuit and all that sort of thing. It just doesn't seem like a long-term game for that character and actor.
I'm excited to see what's coming.
Sure. Well, I'm Agent Scott.
And I'm Cam the Provocateur.
And we're from the Spy Hards podcast. Basically, every week we tackle the best and worst of spy movies to decipher if they make our knock list, which is basically the best spy movies of all time.
That's right. It's the need to see official classics. We're creating sort of the pantheon of great spy films. And every week we decide whether to induct or to deny a film access to the knock list.
And I'm Danny, a pop culture extraordinaire. I love to hear from other people about what they're loving in the entertainment and pop culture world. You can find me on Twitter at ATX Gossip Danny, on Instagram at ATX Gossip, and at ATXGossip.com.
And this has been Paul Pod Clubhouse, and thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.